Lil.
And I'm Fitz.
And you're listening to Knock Once for Yes. If you're in the UK, we hope you're enjoying the scorching bank holiday weather we're having. Here at Coffee HQ, it is rather like the surface of the sun.
Yes, we deserve your pity. We have to keep the doors closed, the windows closed, the aircon up. Well, not that we've got aircon, fans off. Even the poor computer, we have to turn the fans down to record. It's roasting in here.
And all for your enjoyment. So if you live in warmer temperatures, feel free to mock our British inability to deal with the heat. And if you live in cooler climes, we very much envy you. You can probably hear the sweat in our voices. But now, what have we got coming up on today's episode, Fitz?
Okay, well, coming up in today's episode, we have some awesome stories from our listeners.
Oh, we do.
We're going to tell you about our paranormal postcard adventures in Bedfordshire. We're going to beg people from cooler climes to send us some ice. And we've also had some pings of the paranormal radar. There have been some strange noises coming from Nottingham.
Yeah, there's been some very strange noises coming out of Nottinghamshire. A few days ago, on the 18th of May, members of the public grew very concerned when they started to hear voices and mysterious noises emanating from the sewer network underneath High Church Street in Old Basford, Nottingham. They were worried that somebody was trapped down there because they could hear these voices, so they called the emergency services, who sent out two fire engines, a special rescue crew and another crew from a different area, and no less than 25 firefighters attended the scene to clamber into the sewer network and conduct a thorough hour-long search to discover the source of the sound. But they found nothing.
How bizarre.
Which is a bit creepy.
Do you know if there was any sort of... there was no missing persons reported or...
I don't know any more about it other than that they must have been truly convinced that somebody was down there to have called that many crew to the scene. I mean, that's a lot. That, you know, two fire engines and 25 firefighters, that's a lot of emergency services. And, you know, they must have been really concerned that somebody was genuinely stuck down there. So they must have... you know, the voices must have been coming out pretty loud and clear, I would think.
Yeah, that's the other thing, of course. I mean, the sewer drains are normally pretty fairly well secured. You know, they have a seal to prevent noxious fumes and unpleasant fumes from escaping.
Yeah, so if somebody had been down there, you know, if it had been tampered with and somebody had broken it, I mean, why would you want to break into a sewer? But regardless, it would have been pretty obvious, I think, if somebody had been down there. I don't know. I just thought it was an odd little story. I mean, nobody's come out and said it's paranormal, but it is a bit weird. I mean, where were the voices coming from? They just sort of vanished.
If there was nobody stuck down there, then where was the noise coming
exactly
from?
Exactly. I mean, I know noises can carry through sewers and things like that, but I mean, these are residents of that street. You'd think that it'd be something they were used to, the way the sound carried. Like you are in your own house, you're aware of the noises and the way sound carries. So it was obviously something very out of the ordinary for them to call 999.
Yeah, but to pinpoint it to the sewers, again,
if you heard
something going down your street, you wouldn't immediately assume sewer.
No.
So they've obviously sort of pinned it down to a manhole cover or a drain cover or something like that.
Definitely. Well, I couldn't find anything on history of the hauntings in the sewers of Nottinghamshire. But what I did find, because obviously I was doing searches for things like strange noises in Nottingham, were a couple of different stories about strange noises in the skies over Nottingham. One of them was very recent, and it was described as catastrophically loud booms and whooshes. And sounding like the War of the Worlds in Nottingham, that was having people leaping out of their beds at 4 o'clock in the morning and running out of their houses, expecting to see aircraft in flames and things like that. And again, people were calling the emergency services. One lady actually called the police and was talking to the responder and saying that she could hear the noise at the time. And the police responder agreed and said that they could hear at their end as well. So some people were describing it as like an explosion followed by a whooshing sound, almost like the noise of a jet engine or a hot air balloon, but the whooshing is going on far too long and too regularly. It's been happening over several weeks, and some people have heard it recurring every couple of minutes throughout the night. So there doesn't seem to be... nobody's come forward with a decent explanation for what this is, but it's all very odd. And the other thing that this led me to then was I found that we've been hearing, apparently, the sky trumpets in Nottingham.
Now, you see, you said earlier that the other one sounds a bit like War of the Worlds. I think the Sky Trumpets sound like the War of the Worlds. Or at least the modern remake of it. They really do.
They really do. It's there's something, I'm sure there's probably a perfectly plausible scientific explanation for Sky Trumpets, but I find it, the noise is just, it's absolutely chilling. I've heard of Sky Trumpets many times. They've been heard around the world for about a decade or so, I think.
Yeah, I did a quick search on this, and the earliest I could find a record of was from 2001 in New York. But there's sort of, you know, the typical internet rumours that have been going on for hundreds of years and whatnot. So it's very difficult to be sure. And I've also found that there's a lot out there that have been sort of debunked as hoaxes already.
As with anything, unfortunately, yeah, making it difficult to pinpoint any evidence certainty. But yeah, by all means, they've been heard around the world, but I didn't realise until just now that we'd had them in the UK as well, which is, it's quite startling. I then found another story of them being heard in Derbyshire.
Yeah, and I've actually got a couple of snippets to play for us. The first one being the recent Sky Trumpets in Nottingham, and the second being a very brief excerpt of the ones in Bristol.
Right, we've been hearing these noises outside. Oh, what? Oh.
Oh, so there you go. I just, like I said before, I just find that noise chilling. I think it's such an alien kind of noise. I'm not saying it's aliens, you know, like the guy off the TV, but it is an alien sounding noise. It's something that just, you can't really liken it to anything else.
Well, you say that, and obviously I liken it to the sound of the aliens in the War of the Worlds. But while I was researching this, somebody had put up a track that was a faked one, and they'd done it of train brakes.
Oh, yeah, I can kind of hear that.
And if the first one in Nottingham, other than the fact that loads of people had heard it, there's been multiple reports, that sounded very much to me like dry bike brakes.
Oh, I can see what you're saying, but I think why it resonates with me as being so creepy is that you can hear the scale of it in the sound. Do you know what I mean? The depth of the echoing, you can hear the reverberations, and you can hear what a big noise that is. And I think that's why I find it so chilling. But yes, so probably scientific and not paranormal, but altogether a bit creepy, strange, and as yet unexplained.
I think that's the creepy bit for me, that it is unexplained. Yeah, nobody definitely seems to really have any idea what it might be.
Well, they certainly can't agree on it anyway.
No, and you know, people have said it's to do with earthquakes and various other things.
Or earth background noise. But
yeah, I'd heard that, and someone had said, you know, there's sounds like that going on all the time.
And we just can't hear them.
Just don't hear them because they're not loud enough. Mm. Well, what causes those noises, and when they are that loud, why are they that loud?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that one goes in the unexplained box, and hopefully we'll come back to that in a few years' time when somebody comes up with an explanation.
Indeed.
But for those of you waiting for an update on the spooky goings-on at Coffee HQ, I'm afraid to tell you that nothing's happened.
It's all gone a bit quiet.
Since last episode, not a sausage.
Nothing. Not a bean.
So you can guarantee that now that we've said that, next episode we'll be coming back and saying the house has been turned upside down.
All hell's broken loose. Well, I wonder, in our experiences, a lot of hauntings and paranormal phenomena seem to be seasonal. Not always the case, but we have experienced a lot of times that in particular houses, things will kick off at a certain time of year. One of the houses we lived in, it always seemed to kick off around September, October time. So I'm wondering if it's one of those things where there's like a little window, but we will have to wait and see on that.
I've got a very Disney-esque image in my head now of some spook like trolling about his business, throwing matches in the kitchen floor and things. And then there's a spectral toot toot. It's like, oh, shift's over. Summer's coming.
Pack it up for until next year. Oh, what a lovely thought. Right, now on with the stories. And our first story is from Harry in Longbuckby. The fireplace in the lounge of my childhood home was huge. It was a giant recessed area that you could stand and walk about in. For context, it was a smaller, less creepy version of the one in the film The Haunting. During the summer months, we never lit the open fire. And at that time, my mother would place two large vases filled with dried flowers in the alcove for decoration. Fragile yellow-stemmed bulrushes, frail parchment-coloured cow parsley, and dark brown brittle branches adorned with faded red flowers that were so delicate they would disintegrate between your fingers. This room was north-facing, and so it became the oasis of the house when the weather was warm. Opening the windows only made it hot, so naturally, on Sundays, my overworked father would hide in there with the door and window shut to watch the Grand Prix or cricket or any other vaguely sport-associated program that he could feast his eyes on. I think I was about 8 when it happened. We heard him shouting, "Wendy! Wendy!" from his hideout with an uncharacteristic level of urgency and terror. It was the first time I saw my dad look quite horrified. Turns out, those dried flowers had randomly started to shake. And I don't mean a gust of wind coming down the chimney and disturbing them somewhat. He said they had been violently trembling, as though someone had grabbed them and shaken them vigorously. So much so that they began to make a loud shing sound from the intensity of the rustling. The strange thing is that it stopped the moment my mother entered the room. The windows were shut, the door was shut, and the chimney could never have produced enough breeze to cause such intense movement. Additionally, the flowers remained intact. These were fragile, dead plants that tended to turn to dust just from touching them. But there was no dust. There was no ruby red confetti petals on the ground. It was as though they'd never been touched at all. Skip forward a few years. The kitchen shared a chimney with the lounge, though its fireplace was smaller and less grand. Still recessed, the upper outer part of the design included a sort of stepped pyramid shape that my mother had used to put photos, nostalgia-laced mementos, clay pots one of us kids had made in primary school, and general trinkets and figurines one accumulates over the years. At this time, there were also dried flowers on top of the pelmet boards. We have the 90s to thank for these questionable fashions. Both the ornaments above the fireplace's recess and the dried flowers were always left untouched. Too high to easily reach, and honestly, they were uninteresting to any of us after having been there so long. One day, upon returning to the house after a family day out, we came home to find all of the dried flowers had been taken off the pelmet boards and had been laid carefully, with no dust or mess whatsoever, either on the floor or dining table. And the middle section of ornaments on the fireplace had been placed on the floor in exactly the same order, but mostly all laying on their side. Only one item was broken, a miniature pottery windmill. And the most freaky thing of all was that the only thing standing up, right in the center of it all, was a photo of me, a portrait from primary school that had been taken years before. No person who had access said they had been in the house that day. No one knew anything of what we were talking about. And as far as we can tell, no one had any reason to do this. We put everything back as it should have been, but never found anything that indicated what happened. And there were other things that happened in that house. I would sometimes hear one of my siblings calling me and go in search of them in the house, only to find they weren't at home. My brother said this had happened to him so many times, and often while I was at a friend's house. I would wake up in bed, feeling pressure on my chest and arms, screaming and being stuck like that for maybe 10 minutes, eventually running out of my bedroom to find my parents baffled when I asked them why they hadn't come to check on me when I was screaming. They said they never heard any screaming. My sister would see just a hand on the arga that sat in the kitchen fireplace, somehow spinning the bar affixed to the cooker that could only be moved a centimetre in each direction if you would try and turn it. My mother got someone in. I'm not sure who they were. I assume now there was some kind of spiritualist. This woman said that the fireplace in the lounge had once been the front door to a cottage, and an old man had lived there. She believed his spirit was still there. We were dubious. However, this house was built by my parents. They had bought a roadside cottage that came with a lot of land, and we had lived in the cottage at the front of the plot whilst the big house was being constructed. After some research, it turns out that the cottage they had bought used to be the end of a row of terraces, and the plot had accommodated a number of houses, which is why, after their demolition, the plot was so large. So it is indeed possible that the fireplace could have been on the original footprint of one of those cottages. I must add that I remain a skeptic, and whilst I adore the concept of ghosts and ghouls, I do not believe they exist. But to this day, I still have no clue how to explain these things.
Wow, there was a lot going on there, a lot of haunted happenings. But I love the bit at the end, though, where she tells us this amazing haunted stories and then says, but I don't believe in ghosts.
I can see where she's coming from there. And I tend to class myself as a skeptic. And don't get me wrong, I love my creepy stories. I love ghost stories. I love horror. It's all fun. And I'm not saying that I don't believe people when they say they've had these experiences, because obviously we've had them. All I'm saying is, don't know what they are. They may have a rational explanation. So to sit there and say, you know, don't believe in ghosts, that's fine, because you've got this sort of this baggage that comes with the word ghost.
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean. And actually, it's something that we hear a lot, because obviously we ask a lot of people for their ghost stories. And especially over here in the UK, the first thing people will say is, no, I don't believe in any of that stuff. However, I did live with a poltergeist, and they'll continue on to tell you the most amazing story I've ever heard. It's quite odd.
Yeah, the amount of times both of us have heard that from various people. Yeah, I don't believe in all that nonsense, but...
But...
And you get a fantastic story out of them. You just think, okay,
that's
whatever.
That's just a very British attitude.
Yes.
But no, I can totally see where she's coming from. We said this in the very first episode. We use the word ghost as a catch-all term for ease of explanation as much as anything else. But, you know, the fact is, spooky stuff happens and we don't know what it is. And that's what it boils down to, really.
Indeed. And for Harry, I've got a possible explanation for your experience when you were saying that you woke up screaming. Possible that you were experiencing something called sleep paralysis, and forgive me if you're already aware of this, but basically it's a point where you're half woken up and half not. Your brain, when you're asleep, sort of switches off your movement so that you don't sort of clamber out of bed and climb the walls and things when you're sleeping. And that is still occurring, but you start to sense your surroundings. So you'll be able to see your room or what have you, but you're still partially dreaming, so you can see people, or if there's a pressure on your chest, like you say, that can be from sort of your mind restraining your body, and your brain sort of fills in and goes, oh, there must be something sat on me.
And that would explain why you were screaming but your parents couldn't hear you. I've actually had that myself. Sleep paralysis is horrible, and I have had that sensation where I've been screaming at, well, I thought I was screaming at the top of my lungs or trying to, and just nothing was coming out. It's a horrible experience. But so yeah, as a skeptic, that is one possible explanation for you for that. But for the other ones, I've got no idea.
Yeah, and a lot of them are really strange. I mean, the one where all the plants and knickknacks and things were taken down and laid out on the floor.
Yeah, that sounds like more like classic poltergeist activity, doesn't it?
Well, kind of. I mean, poltergeist is generally sort of, you know, meant to be a difficult or a pain or, you know, they're being intrusive, whereas this almost sounded like it was being very delicate with things.
Yeah, and everything was carefully laid out with no mess. And no dust.
Yeah, there was one thing that was broken that I think was the
windmill
yeah. wasn't it? But it almost seemed like that was an accident.
But you know what? If I came home and saw that and then found my picture at the centre of it,
that is a bit strange.
That is creepy.
But it did say, my feeling from that was very much, you know, if I knock one thing over, they're just going to think it's fallen over. Whereas if I put everything down, they're going to know something's here.
Yeah.
It's almost like
they're
a sort
of... trying to make a point.
It was making a point that something is present.
So do you think it sounds like that was a previous resident? I mean, it does sort of... The research, you know, what they found out afterwards does seem to back that up, that it used to be these houses and then having this spiritualist in saying that they thought it was a previous resident. Trying to make a point that maybe, hey, you're in my house.
Who knows? This, again, is the problem with these sort of things. It's easy to speculate. It's difficult to say, especially when all you've got is sort of moving objects. It's difficult to read something into it. But again, you do tend to find a lot of stories where people have altered something to get some activity.
Definitely. And there was obviously a lot of work going on. There were a lot of renovation and people can live in houses for years and have absolutely no activity at all. And then they'll start to do some work on the house, start to do some renovations, and it will basically kick something up. Like, you know, something was there and it's not happy about what you're doing to
its
house.
And they've built a whole new house there. It's like, you know, I don't like the decorations.
Don't like these 90s decorations.
Dead flowers. Honestly.
I did like that. It was kind of made me nostalgic for my own haunted childhood home. That did. Anyway, very interesting. Thank you very much to Harry and Longbuckview for that story. Shall we have another one?
Indeed.
It's a goodie. It's from a listener in Leicester.
When I was 16, my parents moved into a house that they are still living in to this day. When we first moved in, I felt really uncomfortable in the house. I just had an uneasy feeling that couldn't be explained. And from the first night, strange things started to happen. So I had a cat who I'd grown up with, and he used to sleep on my bed every night. And I left my bedroom door ajar for him so that he could come in and out of the bedroom as he wanted to. And on the first night there, when everything had settled down and my parents had gone to sleep, I could hear footsteps walking down the passage towards my bedroom, and it sounded like somebody wearing flip-flops. When the footsteps got to my bedroom door, it swung open slightly, and my cat was sitting up on the end of my bed with his hair standing on end, making a low hissing sound. I got up and I checked, but there was nothing behind the door. And this happened repeatedly every night for about a month. And then my sister and her husband came to visit the family. They stayed for a weekend, and after the first night they stayed there, my brother-in-law asked me in the morning if I had felt anything strange or anything strange had happened in the house while we'd been there. So I asked him why, and he said he'd woken up in the middle of the night and seen a little girl standing at the foot of their bed wearing a swimming costume and flip-flops. So I got curious and started doing a bit of research. It turned out that when my parents had bought the house, it came with plans that had been drawn up to build a swimming pool in the garden, but the pool had never been built. There also had been a swimming pool in the housing complex that had been filled in probably about 10 years before that. So my friends and I got together, we went to the local library and started going through old newspapers, and we discovered that the people who had owned the house before my parents had a little girl, and she really liked swimming, so they had plans drawn up to build their own pool, but sadly she had drowned in the housing complex pool, which is when it had been filled in. This continued to happen all the way through until I got a friend of mine who was a minister to come and say a prayer at the house or a blessing, and after that everything stopped.
Now, I've said enough times already on this episode that I'm a bit of a skeptic, And as such, people quite often ask me why I have an interest in the paranormal. That story is why.
Yeah.
That is precisely why. You've got a story where somebody has experienced something, they've not confided in somebody else, and they've experienced something that ties in with that. They've then not only done that, they've done some legwork, mm-hmm. and very impressive legwork, I must yeah. say, to look up the background, and everything ties together.
I know, it's incredible that it really is a gem of a shining example of why we're interested in the paranormal. You've got multiple witnesses, you've got research that ties into the sightings, you've got a backstory there, you've got the history. And can I just say, so much respect to our listeners are so good at doing their research. They Indeed. Really are. Absolutely fascinating.
Not only that, really creepy.
Yes. Oh, incredibly creepy. And just, I don't, oh, there's something about like the sound of the flip-flops coming towards you and then, and seeing the girl at the end of the bed.
Oh, yes,
and,
a child, flip-flop noises. It is like something out of a creepy film.
It is. And a tragic story, actually, as well.
Yeah, and it's obviously quite recent. If it was, it was presumably the people that had the house before they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very sad. Very sad, but a fantastic story. Thank you so much for sending that in. We do have another awesome story from the Pacific Coast Spirit Watch that is coming up. But first, we have been on another Paranormal Postcards adventure, and we're going to tell you a little bit about that now. So we decided to pop over to our neighbouring county of Bedfordshire, and we asked the paranormal community where we should go. And overwhelmingly, the first name on everybody's lips was Clop Hill.
St Mary's Church, specifically.
Yes, St Mary's Church, Clop Hill. It's a little bit infamous on the UK paranormal scene, particularly. Got a bit of a reputation for being rather haunted. Now, St Mary's Church is about 600 years old, and it's got a bit of a grisly history. The first reference I could find was in the History County of Bedford, published in 1908, that implied that the church had the unenviable reputation of being a regular haunt of body snatchers. So that can't have helped, really.
No.
And it was abandoned in the 1820s for a new, bigger church built closer to the centre of the village, but was repurposed as a mortuary chapel. Again, building on the grisly history here. Do you know what a mortuary chapel is? Because I didn't until I looked it up.
I have a vague idea, but...
It's basically a chapel in a cemetery or attached to a building where coffined bodies briefly lie before disposal. So there's a lot of sort of...
Disposal or burial?
Burial. I'm reading the dictionary definition for you here. Basically. So, yeah, again, it's sort of, you know, building on the death and things like that. Unfortunately, in the 1960s, the church gained even more unwanted media attention when a spate of graveyard desecration spread across Britain. In 1963, a local couple spotted some youths playing in the street with what appeared to be a human skull. Gets grislier and grislier, really. And basically, these boys said they'd found the skull up at the church, stuck on a broken piece of window frame that had been jammed into a wall. So when they went up there to investigate, the reports claim that police found human bones laid out in the pattern used for a black mass. Now,
that's obviously in British police training. They yeah. immediately spotted that's a black mass.
Exactly. I don't mean to make light of the situation, but how on earth did they know what the pattern used for black mass was? Anyway, as well as scattered cockerel feathers and two Maltese crosses painted in red. The Reverend at the time reported that the graves of six females had been tampered with and a seventh broken opens. The remains were reinterred, but the graves continued to be desecrated, probably because of all the media coverage. Mm-hmm. This wasn't just happening in Clop Hill, I have to say. This was like a nation... This was happening in other places in Britain. It was before the term viral existed. It was something that went viral. I think there were certain books out at the time that may have incited these kind of incidents. It created a bit of a... Rory, I suppose. People got scared. There was a lot of media attention about it. But there have since been some admissions, basically, that it was kids messing around. In fact, at the time, there were some admissions that it was kids messing around in a, you know, an unfunny and very grim way. But the seriousness of the media frenzy sort of overshadowed that.
Yeah, I mean, they very much concentrated on the fact that it was, you know, dark arts and black magic.
Mm.
And it turns out that the kids that had done it had basically thought, oh, how can we make it look scary?
Yeah.
And they'd made it look, you know, it was from, you know, taking sort of inspiration from film and
yeah,
theatre, and it wasn't, you know, anyone that seriously thought that they were doing anything.
I don't imagine it was. No, not from what people have, you know, from the time have said. Well, they're basically, like I said, they're basically admitted to doing it. And it, there wasn't anything particularly dark except that they were being idiots, really. It doesn't help that in the 60s, around the same time, there was a horrible murder in a lay-by near Clop Hill, for which the perpetrator was hanged at Bedford Prison. So there's just so much going on that you can start to see how the stories have arisen. It's just sort of building layer upon layer of, well, grimness, really. Now, that's not to take away from the possible paranormal nature of the place, but a lot of the myths and legends about it are things like that the church was built the wrong way round and it's facing the devil instead of God. Things like that, you know, real sort of unlikely myths. And one of the other ones was that it was built on an old leper colony where lepers and plague victims were left to die. Now, I couldn't find anything to back that up at all. It just seems that it was, you know, this old church was abandoned for not being fit for purpose, and having become degraded and tumbled down. These legends have grown up around it.
To be honest, having been there, I think it's more a case of they couldn't be bothered to climb the hill and they built a new church in town.
And that.
That they didn't have to climb the blooming hill to get to.
Indeed. It is up a very steep track, steep, narrow track, and not somewhere you'd want to drag yourself first thing on a Sunday morning, quite frankly. But yeah, there are lots of ghost sightings that have happened there. Many guests report feeling a strange, chilly and unsettling atmosphere, and several people have claimed to capture ghostly figures on camera. A lot of them are hooded or monk-like figures, which actually may have some basis in fact, because the church is quite near to priories. So it could be a monk that is, you know, travelling through the area. It's not out of the realms of possibility. Locals apparently also believe that the church is haunted by a ghost called Sophie or Sophia, and a visitor is thought to have captured her on camera when they photographed the church and spotted the image of a woman in white in one of the church windows. But they were shocked to discover that the window was nearly 2 metres above floor level and therefore had to discount it for being a living person. So that's quite interesting. Even apparently the very steep and narrow lane is reportedly haunted by a horse and rider. The rider appears to be wearing a hooded robe like a monk. You can see a theme here, and carrying a lantern. A news agent in 1969 saw the horse emerge from the darkness and pass straight through his car, much to his shock. So yeah, Clop Hill is fairly near to Chicksands and Beedlow, or Bailey Priory, as they're sometimes known. So I wonder if that's where a lot of the monk-like sightings have come from. And actually, more recent sightings, ghost hunters have been out there and found and seen monk-like figures. We, however, did not.
Nope. We didn't really feel anything. I mean, to be honest, it was a glorious day.
It was. It was so a beautiful spring day.
We didn't really feel anything. We didn't see anything in particular. It was just a really lovely day. We did sit down and we took some photos and we were just chattering away. When we were approached by the local warden for the church.
Yes. And it all went a bit weird.
Yes, it did go a bit strange. I've never been accosted sort of sitting in a churchyard before.
No.
But yes, we were approached and basically told that I'm bearing in mind that we weren't sort of, you know, we're not ghost hunters, you know.
We've talked about the purpose of the paranormal postcards before, and the whole point of it is to be a tourist. You know, the whole point of it is that you can enjoy these ghost stories in our haunted heritage, not as a ghost hunter. You know, you don't have to go out with an EVP recorder and an EMF detector, you can go and enjoy these places as, you know, Joe Bloggs. And that's exactly what we were doing in our civvies with nothing more than a camera. And then we were sort of almost threatened a bit by these wardens who... It was odd because I can't see how we could have given any inclination that we were looking for ghosts. It's not like we were out there in Knock Once for Yes t-shirts, because we don't have any. I would like one, but we don't.
We're working on it.
We're working on it. We were just sort of sitting enjoying coffee and, you know, a lovely spring day. And they literally said to us, if you put out on social media that you've seen a ghost here, we will take down your social media. It was very strange.
Yeah, it was very much, you know, if you tell anybody you've seen a ghost, we'll take down your page.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a, you know, we'd rather you didn't publicise it. It was like, we're going to come after you if you try and claim there's any ghosts here. Now, you know, admittedly, we didn't see anything at the time.
No, yeah, we didn't.
We took a few photos.
Needn't have bothered, really.
Yeah, we didn't have bothered. Yeah, nothing came out and we didn't really feel anything while we were there. And if they'd have said nothing, we'd have wandered off none the wiser. And, you know, we wouldn't have really had much of a story to tell, to be honest. You know, we'd perhaps have thought twice about telling you about it other than just giving you a brief rundown of the history. But I'm basically this. We looked up more about this when we got home. And I can kind of understand where they're coming from, because they've had people up there that are claiming to be ghost hunters and they're basically destroying the property.
Yeah, unfortunately, we did find a newspaper story that happened quite recently where some youths had gone out to Clop Hill out of hours when it wasn't open to the public, and they said to the police that they'd been tipped off by ghost hunters that it was haunted, and that's why they went up there. They were sort of chased off by the local police, and it was later found that they'd done some very serious damage to what is a heritage site, which is very unfortunate. And I can't imagine any serious paranormal investigator would ever consider damaging heritage property any property.
I'm not saying these kids were investigators, but they basically tried to claim that that was why they were there.
Which is a real shame.
Yeah, and, you know, these are historic treasures that once they're gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look after these things. So I can understand the wardens being... very cautious.
Yes, I can understand them being wary
over what's going on. It was just a little bit...
I'm not sure this is the way to go about it.
No, it put a little bit of a downer on our day.
It did.
We were just sort of taking pictures and enjoying walking around the church. And, you know, it is open to the public.
It's
not like we're trespassing.
No, and we were just literally, again, part of the Paranormal Postcards is about the history of these places. It's something I particularly enjoy. So we were just enjoying some of our heritage. And I do think it's a shame that they felt the need to go that route with it. But that is the unfortunate end result of people destroying heritage property.
Indeed. So I know none of our listeners will be involved in that sort of thing. But yeah, sadly, that's the sort of thing I think we're going to have to be more careful of going forward.
Definitely. Not something that we've encountered before, which is a shame. So after that put a bit of a downer on our day, we decided to go and have a picnic in the lovely and rather haunted Amtill Park. Now, the area which is now Amtill Park can be traced back to 1086, but the castle, which despite its name was actually more of a palace or a fine manor house than a true castle, was built in the 15th century. And in 1532, Henry VIII, he basically locked up his wife there while his divorce papers were going through and he tarted around with Anne Boleyn. But he did go back there and decided that he didn't fancy that castle anymore and built a new one, thus leaving the castle to fall into ruin. So there's nothing left of it now, but there is still the mound that it was on. So we had another bit of a walk up a hill, although it was very pretty once you got to the top.
Yeah, it was quite pretty and it was quite a gentle walk. It wasn't too bad.
And there's some nice benches to sit and admire the very gorgeous view from the top across Bedfordshire. But in its place to mark where the castle once stood is the Catherine's Cross, as you imagine, so named after Catherine of Aragon, who was detained there, we shall say. And from this cross, a phantom knight on horseback is said to appear, only to gallop off towards the stream and vanish into thin air. Now, the sightings vary in detail. Some people report seeing a shadowy figure on horseback, and some have even reported seeing a resplendent knight in shining armour complete with lance and streaming pennant. So quite detailed, you know, varying from just a shadowy nuance to a very detailed figure. But there have been multiple sightings of this ghostly rider, including several in the 1900s by soldiers stationed nearby, whilst Amp Hill Great Park was used as a training ground for soldiers in World War One. That's something we didn't realise. We didn't find out until we got there, but when you look on the visitor map, it actually shows you the where you can still see evidence today of the World War prisoner of war camp that once stood in the park. You can see the bases of the prisoner of war camps. Yeah, I think
the foundations are still there, aren't they?
Yeah, although I think that was World War II. And when it was used as a training ground in World War One, there was they dug trenches to replicate life in the trenches and all sorts of things like that. So very interesting. But unfortunately, we did not see the ghostly horse and rider.
No, we waited and waited and waited. And the knight did not appear.
Did not. Dang it. But it was a very beautiful park and a lovely bit of history. So as this started to turn into a bit of a road trip, we went back up the road some way to Houghton House.
Which is literally sort of 10 minutes walk away from...
Yeah, well, it is part of Amp Hill Great Park, in fact. And it's still, the ruins of it still stand today purely because they dismantled the original house in 1797, but decided to keep the ruins as a garden feature for the Great Park. And they're ridiculous. It is just a shell today, but it was once a beautiful 17th century mansion and was reputedly the inspiration for House Beautiful in John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. But yes, the insides were gutted and the grand staircase was torn out and reinstalled in the Swan Hotel in Bedford. It's still stunning.
There's certainly enough there to picture it as it was.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially walking down, there's a tree-lined driveway that runs all the way down to the house, and the sort of crushed gravel driveway out the front. It does. It really does look lovely. And you know, if you squint a little bit, it doesn't look tremendously dilapidated.
You can definitely imagine it in its former glory. And I think we've got to give some credit here to English Heritage who manage it, because it's wonderfully manicured, isn't it?
Yes.
I think that adds to the sort of beautiful juxtaposition of the well-maintained tree-lined avenue against the sort of ruins of the house. It's a bit eerie. And in fact, the whole place was eerie. But I'll just give you a quick rundown of the reported ghost stories there before we got to what we experienced there. Many reports centred here are of shadowy figures watching over you, and if they're spotted, they dart off and vanish into thin air. And more on that in a minute. But another reported experience is another horsey one, is of a horse-drawn coach pulling up outside regularly. In 1915, a lady was walking home from work along the narrow lane towards Houghton House when she heard the thunderous sound of horses' hooves and a jangling of harnesses as though a horse-drawn coach was barreling straight towards her. She flung herself into a ditch to avoid being trampled and heard the coach pass her by and head towards Houghton House as she lay there. But when she looked up to see the coach and horses, it had vanished into thin air. Also, the apparition of a small girl is seen waving from the doorway, which is very creepy. I'm quite glad we didn't see that particular one. But yeah, the most recent reports have been of these shadow figures. Now, as interesting as our day had been up until this point, we hadn't really experienced anything that had set our spidey senses a-tingling until we walked into Houghton House, and
the
it was
second
immediate.
We walked into Houghton House.
Yes.
Literally, my ears started ringing as soon as I stepped inside the building. There were certain areas that it stopped, but for the vast majority of the building, it was just a really high-pitched ringing in my ears, and the hair on the back of my arm stood up.
Yeah.
And you just had this feeling of being observed.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, we do both tend to experience sort of, you know, like our own personal paranormal radar is slightly different. I mean, I've talked about how I often experience before on this show, and this was a classic example of that. I walked in and immediately it was like walking into a cold, wet static. It was almost like walking into a wall of it. The air felt thick. There was pressure on my head. My ears felt woolly. I got that kind of slight feeling of nausea, just like the density and the viscosity of the air changed.
it was just, but we experienced it in the same parts of the house. So although we were experiencing different things, it was centered around the same area. And there were wings of the house that were better, and there were parts of the house that were worse. But I think it sort of correlated how we were feeling that.
Yeah, we sort of compared notes, and literally it was the same spaces we were having sort of the same sort of experiences in.
Definitely.
Now, after a few minutes of wandering around the house, I went outside to take some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was taking some pictures, all the windows are gone, the doors are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a room I could see from where I was standing. And there was a beam of light going across the room. And I saw it cut out, like be blacked out, mm-hmm. and then came back. And then a few minutes later, again, the light cut out as if someone was walking between the light and where it was shining on the wall. And then it stayed dark. And I thought nothing of it, because obviously Lil was walking around the building and I presumed it was her. But it was only when she came out and the light hadn't reappeared that I asked her, you know, had you gone into this room? And she said, no, I was down the back underneath and nowhere near the room that I'd seen the sort of shadows in.
And in fact, when we were talking about it, it transpired that I hadn't yet been in that room at all. It was a place that I hadn't visited. I didn't even know it was there. It was sort of tucked away at the back of the building and I hadn't entered there. And the whole time Fitz had been seeing this, I was downstairs in the basement and we were the only... It was a very quiet day. There was nobody else. There's nobody else for miles, really, was there? There was nobody else in sight. And if anybody had come in, you would hear them crunching down the gravel drive. We did hear somebody come down later, so it was very, very obvious when somebody arrived. So while he was experiencing this, as I said, I was downstairs in the basement. And as soon as I got down there and started walking towards, I think it would have been a service staircase at one time. As soon as I started walking towards it, I got the chills and I could feel that there was just something there, like somebody was watching me. And you got to bear in mind, this is a beautiful, bright spring day. You know, it wasn't like it was overcast or, you know, getting dark or anything. There's no reason for me to feel extra creeped out. And I sort of peered around the corner of this slight tower or turrety bit. And I just kind of stood there and I was waiting for something to happen because you could just feel it in the air. And as Fitz was saying, all the windows are gone. There's just the window frame. So where I was looking at the back of the wall, there was a square of light where the sun was casting through an open window frame. And as I stood there watching it, something blacked it out. Basically like something had moved behind me and stood in front of the window to block out the light. And then it moved away. And as Fitz was thinking, perhaps it was me popping in and out of the doorway, I was thinking perhaps it was Fitz, but my logical brain was thinking, the floor is gravel. You're the only people here. There's no background noise. You're in the middle of the countryside. You would have heard it. But I went and checked. I went back up the stairs and there was nobody there. Fitz was still on the other side of the field, wondering to himself about the shadow figures that he was seeing darting in and out of the doorway. And I suppose it really only hit home when we compared notes and we realised that we had, in fact, seen the shadow figures of Houghton House. And it was quite the experience, I have to say.
It was.
And I would highly recommend visiting. It's a beautiful place. It certainly was the day we went there, and English Heritage are doing a fine job of maintaining a beautiful piece of history.
And take a camera.
Yes, take a camera and maybe a digital voice recorder on a quiet day. So that was our paranormal postcards adventure. And if you want us to send you a real life, actual proper paranormal postcard through the mail, then you can get one by becoming a Patreon member.
Yes, if you visit our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/KOFY, you'll find that one of the rewards for certain tiers of membership is to receive paranormal postcards a few times a year.
Yeah, we got very excited about this and actually sent ourselves one as a tester. We sent it to ourselves and I was still so excited when it turned up. It was just so sad. Loved it. But yeah, basically, we're going to try and when we go on our paranormal postcards adventures, we'll do maybe a little bit of information about what we found there and take some lovely pictures. And, you know, you'll be the first to know about them.
Paranormal postcards are just one of the things you could receive by becoming our patron. Please check out our Patreon page for details of our other rewards.
You can support us from as little as $1 a month, and we're working hard at the moment to bring more content to our page for all levels of subscribers. And if you have any ideas about what you'd like to receive as our patron, please do let us know. Now, if you want the full write-up from the Paranormal Postcards trip, then you can check it out at our website on the Paranormal Postcards blog. But for now, we're going to finish up the show today with a fantastic story from Pamela Ennis of Pacific Coast Spirit Watch. My paranormal team, Pacific Coast Spirit Watch, investigates throughout California, Oregon, and Nevada. These stories happened at the Knights of Pythias building and the Washoe Club in Virginia City, Nevada. My husband came along on this trip, a true skeptic. I knew this was going to be fun. Robert is a former Marine who served in Vietnam. To say that he doesn't get rattled would be an understatement. Robert was Force Recon, and during his last tour, he was wounded by 3 hand grenades during a running firefight. He was wounded in both legs, both arms, and he has a plate in his head. But don't let that fool you. To look and talk to him, he shows no visible signs of his injuries. Robert was part of an 8-member team and is the only remaining member who has survived. One shot himself. One walked into the China Sea. One drove his motorcycle into a wall. And the remaining died of complications from Agent Orange. I give you this history to give context to the stories that follow. I had finally convinced Robert to come along on one of our Virginia City weekends. Earlier in the day, we had visited the Knights of Pythias building, which had been sold, and at the time was scheduled to be a wine tasting room. One of our members, Jackie Klebe, obtained the key and we went to do some recon. It's a beautiful old building, built with stucco and cast iron. Downstairs was some storage and an old bar, but upstairs was a beautiful cherry wood bar with gold-veined mirrors behind. We walked throughout, admiring as we went. We took pictures of everything, the room, the mirror, and the bar, including the top. It was obvious that no one had been there in quite a while. There were a couple of old bills lying on the bar, covered in layers of dust that hadn't been disturbed for a very long time. I walked from room to room until I had the opportunity to enter a large kitchen. Standing there, I imagined what I could do with all this space. I love to cook, and this would have been a dream for me. Robert called out, and I returned to the great room. In the centre was a space, maybe 4 foot by 4 foot, covered by linoleum or tile. We surmised this must be where they held their ceremonies. Maybe this is where the Grand Master or head of the group sat. Against my husband's wishes, I decided to call out the spirits. Now, after all, it was during the day. I started tap dancing on the spot. "I hear you don't like women in your space," I said. "Well, here I am. What are you going to do about it?" Robert was not too happy with me at this point and asked me to stop. Nothing happened, so we locked the door and left, looking forward to returning later that night. After dark, we returned with a group to start our investigation. We split into several groups and started. I had my camera and digital recorder as I walked throughout the building. I headed towards the kitchen area and started my EVP session. "This is a lovely kitchen. Are we having a party? Am I invited?" I moved on to the bar area. Just then, Robert called everyone to the bar. Written in dust were the words, "Get out."
These words were not there earlier. We had all examined the bar, and we would have noticed these words. Even more concerning was that the words were written in the dust, but had not been pressed all the way to the wood. Now, if someone flesh and blood, not something, were trying to scare us or get our attention, it would have been difficult, if not impossible, not to press all the way down through the layers of dust to the wood. We took pictures of the area so that we could compare them to the pictures taken earlier in the day. Then something happened that sent shivers down our spines. A growl, audible to all in the room, guttural and loud. At that point, Robert said to the group, "Someone doesn't want us here. Time to go." And that's just what we did. Later, while reviewing my EVP sessions, I heard the following. The answer to my questions in the kitchen area. "This is a lovely kitchen. Are we having a party? Am I invited?" The answer on the recorder was male, clear, and direct. "Not you." Once we had left the Knights of Pythias building, we moved on to the Washoe Club for our overnight investigation. The Washoe Club is also known as the Millionaires Club, an exclusive haunt, pardon the pun, of the Silver Barons of the Sierras, the likes of Ulysses S. Grant, General Robert Sherman, and Mark Twain were some of the members. It's also the current residence of some interesting and not always welcoming entities. On the second and third floors are many rooms and hallways. Each room is connected to a hall and to other rooms as well. Robert and I had stationed ourselves in adjoining rooms. We each sat on folding chairs side by side, looking towards the main hallway that leads to the ballroom. We sat there for quite a while when Robert started acting a little strange. "Did you see them?" he asked. "No, I didn't see a thing." I thought that would be the end of it, but it wasn't. He stood up and started walking room to room. "Where are you? Why are you here?" Stress in his voice. I was beginning to get concerned. As I said before, Robert doesn't get rattled. He is the most level-headed person I know, and an overactive imagination is not something he has. I followed him from room to room as he searched for what he saw. Finally, we came across some of our team, Tammy and Warren. They could see that Robert was shaken. They asked what was wrong. "Did you see anything?" he asked. "No," was their reply. He asked if they smelled anything strange. "Yes," they said. "We smelled something damp and sweaty, like somewhere very humid, with a body odour." "The jungle," Robert replied. It should be noted that this was the beginning of April, and it was literally below freezing at this time. I got Robert to sit down, and he finally told me what had happened. As he was sitting in the chair, watching the hallway, he saw something he had seen in his distant past. A group of seven men walking in a formation of two across, down the hallway, with one man missing. It was his team, walking as they always did when they were going to get their next orders. Everyone was there but him. What had shaken him was why they were there. Were they coming to get the last member of their team? As we sat there, it came to me why they were there. The Washoe Club has been known for some less than pleasant spirits,
as they did in life, they were doing now. They were protecting him. They had his back in life, and now in death. That isn't the end of the stories. When we take Robert on investigations, if he's in the room, nothing will happen. But the minute he leaves, all heck breaks loose. And that's why he mans the monitors and keeps track of the members of our group.
Oh, it sounds like something in the Knights of Pythias building really did not want them in there. That's terrifying, with the get out and the growling and the not you.
Yeah, oh. It seems specifically targeted at Pam.
Or is it women?
Well, this was the other thing I was thinking. Was it because she's a woman? You know, she did mention that it was a sort of male-only building.
Male-oriented.
Or whether it was because she was being quite flippant in taunting them.
Well, yeah, it could be that she was being a bit, riling things up a little bit with the tap dancing. Although I appreciated it. but the second part of that story I found really touching and poignant.
Yeah, I was really sorry to hear about the rest of Robert's team. But
yeah,
it sounds
like you guys have been through more than should be expected of anyone.
Indeed. But it is kind of uplifting to think that they're still looking after him, as it were.
Oh, definitely. It really sounds like they still have your back. And that is really quite beautiful.
And I also wondered, because Pam mentioned that whenever Robert's on investigations with them, that nothing happens when he's there, and it all kicks off when he's gone.
Yeah.
Whether that's a sort of continuation of that, they're just sort of keeping anything from happening while he's around.
Oh, do you know what? I haven't made that connection, but that is, I wonder if that's what it is. That's certainly very interesting that you have a person that will basically kind of cancel out any activity until they leave, and then all hell breaks loose kind of thing. That's really interesting, and I hadn't made the connection with the presence of his team being a protective element, and that's very, very interesting. So big shout out to Pacific Coast Spirit Watch, and thank you to Pamela, who is their case manager, for sending in those fantastic stories.
We'll be linking into their website in the show notes, so you can go check them out for yourselves, and hopefully we'll be hearing some more stories from them in future.
I do hope so. So that's about all we've got time for this episode, but just before we go, we do of course have to announce the winner of the Knock Once for Yes Kentucky Goblin versus Owl Caption Competition.
It was a very difficult decision.
Well, basically we couldn't decide. So we thought we'd pick a winner each, because why not? So we have Terra Accessum on Instagram. I Am Your Secret Twin, next on Jeremy Kyle.
For those of you that are not UK listeners, Jeremy Kyle is effectively our edition of Jerry Springer.
Yes, I like that one. And we also have Starforger Official again on Instagram. That night would be the last time Hedwig would trust Tinder profile pictures. You can see why we couldn't decide. But that really is all we've got time for now. So thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll join us again next episode.